Welcome back to NELP's Young Professional Network podcast, Grown in the Green Industry. Today's podcast is powered by our Young Professional Network partner, Steel. Steel makes a full line of gasoline and battery-powered outdoor power equipment for the demanding landscape professional. Find yours at steelusa.com. Your hosts today include myself, Brett Lemke with RM Landscape, Skylar Westergaard with Landcare, and we have a wonderful guest, a friend and a true professional within the industry, Joe Kajawa. How are you two doing today?
Doing great, Brett. It's good to be with you. Joe, welcome.
Thank you, Skylar. Appreciate it. Thank you, Brett. Appreciate it.
Skylar, he's got a bio. You could ask me to do that for you. I know all of the good things that should be said in this bio, but I think he wrote one, so we'll use his. So.
Yeah, let's introduce Joe, and then we're going to get into a great conversation today. He's got a lot of experience, as you'll see. So a landscape industry certified professional and past member of the NALP Board of Directors, Joe Kajawa oversees Wilson 360's CEO peer group program, helps companies with strategic planning and executive coaching, consults with snow market leaders on winter service strategies, and advises companies on the unique challenges of running and transitioning a family-owned business. Joe graduated from Cornell University's College of Architecture, Art and Planning, and received an MBA from the Owens Graduate School of Management at Vanderbilt University. Joe, it's great to have you. Did I miss anything? How did I do on the bio there?
Sounds good, I guess. Thank you very much. No, you didn't miss anything at all. I don't even know who that guy is.
It's a wonderful bio, and I always thought when we talked about you becoming a guest, I thought that there's always just a little uniqueness to, say, many of the bios. I mean, certainly this industry is full mm-hmm. of those that started with a truck and an idea, some of those that had the family background. But the family has been part of the industry for a lifetime. It wasn't your path initially, but you found your way here. And so I thought maybe for the context of just, you know, this industry very well, but how did it all start with you becoming a part of this? And obviously a little bit more about the family and their part of the industry.
Sure, Brett. Well, actually, you're right. My dad and mom started a business way back in 1962. And when they took over my grandfather's business. But for me, it was interesting. I never wanted to be a landscape architect. I always wanted to be an actual a real architect, as I would joke with my LA friends. And so it would have been very easy for me to go to school, get an LA and come back and practice, but I chose a different path and left the industry. After growing up, all my family vacations as a child were always at the old Elka summer field there, or summer leadership and different events like that. I was out of the industry for many years, practiced architecture in Washington, D.C., met my wife, ended up going to graduate school for my MBA at Vanderbilt, and decided to go into consulting at that time, which was a lot of fun. And then I started traveling a lot, which was not so good when I was trying to raise three small children with my wife, and I was out of town most of the time. Happened to come up to Milwaukee, where the family is, and my brother Chris, who was very active in the association, is still with our company. He invited me back and said, you know, you're on the road too much. Why don't you come do what you're doing now in terms of consulting and operational and process consulting for other clients, but come do it for the family business. And so we talked with my parents, found an opportunity that worked for us all. And I came back to the industry in 2003. And it's been great. I've really enjoyed it. Helped grow our company in 2019 and 2018. We ended up selling our third generation family owned business we were the first acquisition by Sperber when they came back into mm-hmm. the marketplace. And, you know, the big reason there was we looked and had some discussions. We weren't really planning on selling, but we saw there was not a fourth generation that was looking to take on the business. And most of our management team was also the same age as my brother and I, so they really weren't a viable option for transitioning it out. So that it worked out really well with Sperber. My brother stayed on, and he's still the president of KEI, working with them. And I transitioned at that time to work with Bruce Wilson, who we at KEI had used as a consultant. And I joined him helping Other landscape companies, you know, find their way in, and with coaching and strategic planning, facilitating peer groups, which is some of the work I had done prior to coming back into the landscape industry. So now I'm doing the consulting for this industry, which has worked out really well for me, combined two of my passions.
It's good to learn about that story of studying architecture and how and your pathway into where you're at right now. I would love for you, you know, we have a lot of younger listeners, young professionals, maybe even some students that are still in college or some that are starting their own business and are fresh out or starting their careers. I would love for you to just maybe spend a few minutes, Joe, and do a little education on the power of peer groups and consulting. What is it that you do? Why is that beneficial? Why do smart business leaders join peer groups in our industry? And just kind of, like I say, educate some of our younger listeners that may not be familiar with what that's all about.
Sure. I think, you know, what I found really interesting, and when I joined a peer group with Bruce Wilson as a owner, prior to that, like Brett and I knew each other. We had met at Executive Forum and in different events, and we'd get together with a couple other guys and we'd talk about issues and problems that we were having and how do you handle this? How do you handle that? You know, what have you done here? And what the peer group does is kind of take that, which I think many good professionals, good leaders will do, seek out advice from their peers and people they know, and it just formalizes the process. So we have a little more structured process involved where we meet regularly, we have interim calls, we share information in a formatted manner so that we're all on the same page with each other, and we act as an informal board of advisors to each other. And it's really helped us share, at least Brett, I don't know about what you've gotten out of it, but I know, you know, I've learned from Brett's company and others in our group at the time. And it, you know, puts you on the, gives you the shortcut, if you will, because someone's already gone down that path before and they can maybe point out some of the potholes and rocks or give you advice on, you know, what you can do to be a little more effective. And I found it when I was an owner to be incredibly valuable to me and it really helped us grow our company probably much faster than we would have without that experience helping out.
You know, everybody that I talk to and, you know, that I see as really successful people in our industry, business owners, it seems like they're all a part of peer groups in one form or another. And Brett, you were going to make a comment. You've been a part of that for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, it's one part therapy. It's one part, you know, not the therapy you wanted, but it's a kick in the butt, right? So it's one part of the accountability sessions. And so you may have wanted everybody to sort of, you go in there with a thought like everyone's going to understand and sort of, you know, quote, rub your back, you know, hey, it's going to be okay. You generally come out and say, you know, what are you going to do about that? And so, and that's what I've appreciated. So there's both paths. You'll find that you're amongst peers that understand what you're going through. And that's helpful. And then you're going to be held accountable because generally at the top, you know, no one's really going to tell you what you need to do. You have to sort of self-motivate, but this really can hold you and to, you know, put you on that path to doing such a thing. And so it's very valuable. The time spent, you know, expense, you know, away from your business, all those things, and to Joe's point, you know, big return on investment. And it goes as far as you can commit. I would say that, you know, your level of participation, your level of how serious you take it, how you prepare. So, you know, prepare, you know, think through the right group. I think, Joe, you'll probably talk a little bit, like not everybody should be in a peer group just to be in a peer group. You got to match things up better. But once that's there, then really commit to it and you'll see a big change.
Yeah, I would agree. I think one thing that's interesting is everyone always thinks, oh, I'm in a peer group and I got to be, you know, I want to be the smallest one in it. And no one wants to be the biggest company in it because they think they're going to learn more from someone who's bigger. And something that I've learned through my experience is size is not really, you know, size doesn't matter. I keep telling my wife, size doesn't matter. And it's really about how advanced you are, how sophisticated you are as an owner. Are you reading? Are you learning? Are you empowering your people? There's a lot more to getting value from someone that maybe at a smaller company, but is really sharp and on top of things than someone who's maybe in a big company that isn't quite as engaged or isn't quite as sophisticated an owner as some of the other people. They may be more, they may be larger, but they could be stagnant in growth, whereas a smaller guy might really be growing his company in a very, you know, hockey stick kind of way.
So it's, we know that consultancy exists across industries. Your time as an architect and time, did you find, you know, I was curious, like the outside, is our industry unique in the way that we connect and network, or are we seeing a lot of commonalities, or is it just, what did you find as a tie-in from this industry to others, or are we special? Just say we're special, but.
Well, special. I know, I do believe I've had the opportunity to work in a lot of different industries, and the landscape and snow mark industries, the owners, I think, have gotten here primarily due to a passion for what they do and are really willing to share and be open, give back, give to each other far more than a lot of other industries I've worked in. They're much more willing to share information at a really deep, meaningful level. I know a lot of companies, like, you know, in our peer groups, we share P&L down to the line item. I mean, it is there. All the information is there. You open the kimono and you share everything and take questions and answer. And I know other industries where they just are not willing to give that kind of information. You know, there isn't a level of trust. There isn't a level of, it's a lot of chest thumping and, you know, puffery that, you know, oh, I'm this and I'm that, but you're not willing to prove it or let people see your weaknesses as well. And, you know, if you can't focus on the weakness, you're not going to get any stronger. You know, just saying how good you are over and over isn't going to help you any.
I think it's encouraging to come to the understanding that CEOs need peer groups just as much as young professional, you know, recent college graduates need to develop a network of peers, mm-hmm. and things like that, that at all levels of our career and profession, getting together with a group of people that we can open up to. And as you said, Joe, show the details of the successes and the struggles and stuff happens at people at all levels of their career in our industry.
And I think that you're absolutely right in that it doesn't have to start out as formally as a peer group at first. Like I said, Brett and I, when we first met, you know, we developed a friendship and a relationship and a couple other guys. And we would get together, we served on committees, you know, worked together on different things for the industry and started learning about each other's businesses. And we started, you know, sharing information there. And then that evolved into a peer group. And now as we were in a peer group, that evolved into trying to create opportunities for our key people underneath us that they could network and build those same type of relationships, because we saw the value it had for us and the value it had in our businesses. And it's even gone now to the next level where, you know, my wife and Brett's wives are friends, and, you know, we see each other and things like that. So as an owner, it's often very lonely, even in, you know, I have very successful friends in Milwaukee. I have, you know, we go out socially, we have a lot of fun, but if you're not an owner, it's a different relationship that you have with your job, I think. And I find the conversations I have with my friends that own businesses versus work in businesses are at a different level and a different caliber, if you will. There's a different mindset, and it's refreshing to have that conversation with people in a peer group that are, you know, have us coming from the same point you are.
The time, be it within a formal peer group or just, you know, going to events, it allows the brain to think, you know, differently, grab and capture bigger ideas, depending on where you are, even as an owner within your business. You know, we could be down to still, working with crews on pieces up to managing many, many folks. And so that, it allows, I think, for more strategic perspective. And again, it always is the feedback, you know, if a peer group goes well, if you can say, you know, here's what I want to talk about, but then the group, I enjoy, like, but here's what we see and here's what we've identified, something that's really important that you should be working on. And that's just refreshing. I do like, and I support the idea of going deeper within each organization. And so in allowing the ability for your folks to network. So it's very easy for owners to accept the cost of travel and the time away. And it gets a little harder for someone to accept the ability, the willingness to let managers or production folks leave their office. I mean, even in training, it's like, we got to get out there. We have to be out there. But just understanding that those opportunities create one, I think, a sense of loyalty to the organization to do better, but just allows everybody, if you love the networking and the thought and how it's helping you, why wouldn't everybody else in your organization? So it's, how do you sort of bring that down further is always the piece. And we struggle with that in terms of time and commitment. But at least in our peer group, but we have invited them virtually in person. And it's great to see those relationships grow beyond ours.
And I think as a leader, you can foster that in your organization, or as a rising leader kind of demanded from your ownership. One of the things we used to always do was at Elevate, we would make whoever was attending Elevate from our company be a champion at breakfast. And so it forced them to interact with people about a business topic. And it also made sure they got up and, you know, didn't just spend all their night in the bar. But it was, you need to get up and you need to network with other people and help them break down. Because for some people, networking is a really scary thing. And they're not comfortable just saying hi and introducing, walking up to someone at a reception and introducing themselves and taking that risk. So Breakfast of Champions, we always thought was a good way of getting our team to, you know, start that process and get more comfortable with it. And then they'd also learn something from it as well.
So I have a curiosity, and I think both of you, Skylar and Joe, you both did this where the green industry, this our space is, you know, we think of that traditional org chart, owner, operators, pieces, but both of you were supporting our industry in the consultancy and education. And I think there's curiosities, especially around the consulting, like, how do you become one? Why should someone do that? I mean, what is it, the drivers? And Joe, you spent your career doing this before and after. But I think we all grapple with, or the thought is, oh, well, when you're done, or you see a lot of people doing this, when you're done with running a business or within a business, now you go out and you teach other people how to do it. How does someone do that and do that well? Because I think the key is do it well. Everyone can do it, but it's just, so Joe, what did you think when you thought, should I become a consultant within this industry? Or when you were in your architect world, how did you get a passion for that?
I think what was really interesting for me was as a architect, I was educated and practiced as a creative problem solver. I mean, that's what architecture is. You have a program, you've got constraints, you've got different things you have to work around, and you have to figure out how to solve that problem. And for me, it was very much a natural evolution into changing what the constraints of the problem were. They went from physical to a business problem. And how do you work and solve that problem, whatever that business, was it a process design? Was it an organizational problem, an operational problem? But it was a problem that was in seek of a solution. And so my passion was always in that solving the problem. And I just moved it from the physical built world into business, which I also had a passion and interest for. And so that's how I decided at the time that I wanted to go on to business school to make that change, because I knew from a career point of view, it'd be really hard for me to just leave architecture and say, okay, well, now I'm a management consultant or a business consultant. So it gave me that transition and that ability to make the switch. And I found out that people really hire consultants for primarily three reasons. Either to affirm a decision that someone in leadership has already made, and they just want like that outside approval, like, yes, this is the right thing, because, you know, no one's going to believe me, but if we get some outside consultant to come in and say it, then they'll realize that that's the right answer. Some actually don't know what the right answer is to begin with, and that's why they're hiring you to figure it out themselves. But in my opinion, that's actually less so than the first one. Most people in business know what the right answer is. They just either are afraid to commit to it or need that outside validation. And then the third reason is you need added manpower. It's a project and it needs to get done, and you know, like a strategic planning. You know, it's good to have someone else come in, help you, guide you through it, and then when they're done, they can leave. And all three of those things were very interesting to me, and I think they're great ways to help other companies. You come in, you find the problem, you define it, you solve it, you work with them to set them up for success, and then move on from there. I don't know, Skylar, was that your experience, or how was it different for you?
Yeah, I mean, my role's different. I was in, just so you know, Joe, I was in, I was a university professor, and then came into the kind of learning and employee learning and development corporate training role. For me, I think one of the big things is just my curiosity to learn, and being driven by the excitement of me learning new things and then helping other people like discover those solutions to the challenge. My degree is in landscape architecture. So similar, right? It's a problem solving that creative space. So yeah, what you said resonates a lot with me. And I would just add that curiosity piece for me personally was a driver to do, you know, what I do in teaching and learning. Is I like to learn and I like to help others learn, and we grow and learn together. And so for me, that's kind of a driver, and what really brings a lot of satisfaction to the work I do kind of in that world.
Yeah. See, you said learn. I like the word being challenged. And so I guess you learn through those challenges, or at least I try to.
Yeah.
And I find in working as a consultant, you get to work with some really smart people, and they get to challenge you. And that's what I really like, because business owners, by and large, are smart people. Mm-hmm. And I find that they can challenge you in ways that, you know, you don't necessarily get challenged every day. And that, to me, is really exciting.
Yeah, asking questions. I'd say, I might have shared this before on here, but when I was a college professor, those times when my students would ask me questions about something or ask for clarification, and they would bring up something that I hadn't thought about before, or I didn't know the answer to. And, you know, when you're in front of a bunch of college students, some faculty will be potentially, you know, put you in an uncomfortable position, because you're supposed to be the content expert. But I found those times to be really rewarding, just as you said, Joe, because it gave me an opportunity to go back and say, hey, let me find the answer to that. I don't know. And then go back and figure out what the answer was. And, or maybe if I were teaching senior students, I'd say, let's figure the answer out together. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Let's look into it. So yeah, I agree with that.
I support the idea that both of you in those roles, and current and in past, it's about facilitating to the answer. And so, you know, I work with consultancy. I have ideas. I want to talk with, you know, experts within that. I don't necessarily think, no, actually, sometimes I've probably said to you, Joe, just tell me the answer. Or when I work with Frank Ross in our financials, like, you've done this fun, just tell me the answer. But other times it's like, I want to learn and I want to get to a better understanding of the piece. And so it to have access to, you know, to folks that's in the world of coaching and consultancy, like, that you couldn't probably employ, don't have enough work, or like the, you know, the cost to, but to have access to those and the education awareness of it, you know, use it, but they don't have the magic wand, nor do we. Anybody here has that to say that we're going to fix this for you when we come in by following these six steps, because there's not a unique, there's, everybody's just completely unique about what we do and how we do it. So, but that idea that you know, and Joe, you've done a nice job at it, and many others do too, where it's more questions than it is statements. And it's that, to Scott, your point, curiosity, will allow us all to get to someplace a lot faster.
Well, and I think, Brett, what you said is interesting in that, you know, what's the answer? Well, the answer isn't one thing. It's, you know, what's right for a snow market client that, you know, does a lot of design build work is not the right answer for a 12-month market client that is primarily maintenance work. And, you know, businesses, you know, so many owners think, well, just give me the answer. You know, there's no right or wrong way. It's just being consistent and executing consistently. I think you can be successful any number of ways. The most challenging part is being disciplined about doing it in a consistent manner, about saying no, I think, is the thing most business owners have a hard time doing. And, you know, because they, ooh, there's this shiny new thing over here and it's a great opportunity. And, but it's not your core. It's not what you're good at. It's not what your systems are built around. And being able to say no to that one opportunity is sometimes the hardest thing, but the best thing for your business.
I was thinking, great comment. I was thinking also about, Joe, tell me if you found this to be true, but I think as a mentor, as a teacher, and as a learner, there's great power in asking inspired questions or asking good questions, right? So when I've been in the learner role, you know, having people ask me good, deep questions that get me to think, or get me to help find the answers. And then I think in the role that you and I have, it's different, but in trying to train, coach, help others, asking them inspired questions or asking good, deep questions, I think is part of that discovery and finding out what the answer might be for that particular organization, situation, market, whatnot.
I agree. You know, sometimes though, it's not even deep questions. It's like the obvious question that by asking the obvious question, which everyone knows the answer to, you kind of can see the, ridiculousness of the stance you're taking. So there's an owner who may need to do something and know they need to do it, but for whatever reason, they're shy. They don't want the difficult conversation. And when you ask the question of, so now how much has this person sold over what period of time? And you just, you know, go through this litany of really basic questions. It's like, okay, why haven't we gotten rid of them yet? Or why haven't we done this yet? Or the training? And it just like points it out in a way that it's like, yes, okay, I know I need to do this. And okay, I'm going to do it now. You know,
yeah,
and the group's holding them accountable, right, Brett?
Yeah, just somebody else asking the question, right, Brett?
Yeah, yeah, I'm having a flashback from our peer group meeting last week. don't worry to my sales representatives that are listening. It wasn't you in the set we were talking about in sales, so don't worry.
This was an old time, a long time ago.
Yeah, a long time customer. Yeah, but I'll ask them. You know, be curious about what you sold. No, I think about it from. I mean. You know, we're going to have another batch of people that come into the career. And I often think about, you know, and you'll see, I see it more in other industries, young professionals that are going right into the business of consultancy. Right. And so it's like, I have a judgment of that thought. It's like, how you didn't put the blood, sweat and tears out there by time. You certainly, I'm likely you have the degree and the education and you've got been taught the proven process, but you know, and I imagine there are ones that are very successful and ones that just need to help. But this conversation, I think, drew awareness to that is you don't have to have all the answers, but you do need to help move people in the direction to solving problems. And so anybody can do that. It's just understanding, do you have a way that connects people to solving their problems, the value that you can bring to it? So they don't all have to be old.
No,
but they all look,
you know, it is interesting. And I think Skylar made the good point. You need to be curious. I think any good consultant needs to be curious about the situation they're in and the business they're helping and things like that. And the people they're working with. I do know, I will say when I went back to school, to get my MBA, and I don't think an MBA is the right answer for everyone. I don't think it gives you any magic ticket. As I said earlier, it helped me transition from, you know, careers from architecture to business. So I needed it in that regard. But there were people who came straight in from undergrad and were just going, you know, straight into their MBA. And then there are other people who'd been in whatever industry, whatever business for a number of years before and came back and were going to school for an MBA. Those people tended to offer more value in group discussions, in group things. They just had a broader perspective, more experience to draw on, to draw parallels, to look at things. That experience helps. And so I would caution someone, you know, if you're looking at being a consultant, make sure you get some experience actually working as opposed to just telling people how to work. Or solving problems, that you need to figure some stuff out on your own. I think you would only be better for it in the long run.
Yeah, I'll Jenny, who's Gerard, who's been on this conversation. She just got accepted to an MBA program, and I'm thrilled for her, and it's gonna be very exciting, a lot of work, but she does have constant case studies in front of her. And so when she's gonna tackle something, I'm gonna open up RM, and she already knows much about the business. Like, here, talk about us, please, in these conversations. It has relevancy, and you could see how it's applied. I think of, you know, I'd love to go back to school and apply the theory, you know, all the things I've known, and say, oh, now that basics contracts class, now I know why I should ask more questions or have learned it better. Yeah. And then those pieces there, the elements of design, I should have listened to that a little bit more. I wouldn't have let all these plants die or something like that. So you go back and you reflect on those, but it is, experience will teach you a great deal. How fast can education, you know, be it in school or out there in the world, get you to, you know, the place you want to be?
So here's a question for you, Joe, that based on kind of what we've been talking about for the past little bit, maybe a little bit risky, because, you know, we've been talking about, hey, you got to be curious. There's a lot of different potential answers to, or resolutions to a problem, but I'd love you to, if you can share with our listeners in your experience and in your roles and in your career, especially, you know, as a mentor, as an advisor, if there's something, you know, some advice that you see happen more regularly. Let's put it this way: advice that you would give some of our younger listeners, as far as them kind of having success. I know this is a broad question, but is there something that you see that you've seen a lot that you would tell our younger listeners to look for, to think about, advice for them?
I think the number one thing is kind of what we've been talking about, is build that network for yourself that you can reach out to when you're stuck for an answer, when you've got a problem. I think that tying into that is communication. I've never had a client tell me they've been fired for over-communicating with their clients. And that, I think, the whole idea of communication, whether it is with your client, with your team, with your boss, with your spouse, with your children, communication is a great thing, and it really helps prevent a lot of problems. And it allows you to work in a more collaborative manner towards a better solution. So I think communication is really the key thing. And so to develop that network of people that you're working with and you're helping and they're helping you is the number one thing you can do at any point in your career. It's only going to help you grow as a leader, as a business mind, as a person. So I think that's the number one thing.
Awesome. So maybe I can ask the opposite side of that question. Do you see common pitfalls that maybe business leaders make that you find yourself kind of advising against more often than others? Maybe it's lack of communication, I don't know, but any pitfalls that you would bring up to let people kind of think about?
Well, I think it's kind of like we've also said, it's the lack of curiosity. It is the, well, this is how we do it. Okay, you're seeing me as a consultant because you're having problems in your business, and we're suggesting maybe you should change how you're doing things, but yet you're steadfast in your defense of the way you're doing things that have gotten you to a point where you need to see a consultant to improve your business. Maybe you need to be a little more curious that there might be a better way of doing this, or there may be, you know, times have changed. I know over the last, you know, hell, you can go 1 year, 2 year, 5 years, 10 years, everything has changed. How has your business changed? And if you're still doing everything the same way, that's probably not the right answer.
It's an interesting, just goes back to that point. Like, some companies work with consultants to just validate what they're doing right. And it's not my path. I think of wherever I could get help, or even this conversation, I constantly am working on the things I'm doing wrong or need improvement. And so it is, right, not everybody's meant for the space, but the value of the dollar and time, it's not to validate, it's just to really just build off of the momentum that you have. And so it just becomes, you know, this conversation part here, it's just wild to think that if you're asking for help, be willing to accept that and really build off of that rather than thanks, you know, and then move on in pieces. You at least try it too, right? I mean, how many things we've all received and we do nothing with, and then we have an opinion of how it went. It's like, well, that's not fair either.
And I know a number of people, and luckily it's not the vast majority by any means. I know a number of people that, you know, either don't go to NALP events, or if they go to NALP events, they really don't go to any of the education. It's like, oh, I already know that, or I got, it's like, you know, there's new stuff out there and you need to learn it. Mm-hmm. Not to say that there isn't value. I think there is great value in the conversations that occur outside of the classroom, outside of the sessions. In fact, I often find more there, but you still have to have a basis start and look at some of the sessions that are there. Those are, there's value in those sessions as well.
Yeah, it's sparking that thought. And, you know, Skylar, you're a reader, right? And so you hear an idea, mm-hmm. and then you go find something further to educate you on it. And that could be the MBA programs. I think that's what Jenny, she's curious about how business and organizations are run and strategic parts of that. So this is a path. Great. I'm thrilled for her in that piece. Other people find their, you know, be it go peer-to-peer, find your own way of learning, keep asking the questions, or just start a business and try it yourself, right? I mean, there is always this, that piece too. But it is right. If you're not surrounded by the thoughts and the ideas that can just mm-hmm. keep driving that fun, then
you need to be challenged as a leader, you know, in your business. Yeah. If you're not being challenged by your own people, which is not uncommon because a lot of people don't want to challenge, you know, the president of the company, then you need to, if you're that president, you need to find somewhere else that you are going to be challenged, whether that's in a peer group, an industry peer group, whether that's like in a Vistage peer group, you know, they both have value. But as a leader, you need to constantly be challenged and growing yourself. Otherwise you're going to fall stagnant and really become irrelevant.
So you've seen a lot of pieces, Joe, and of the industry and experiences. What's next? I mean, again, a storied career. What's just going on a fishing boat and just that's the rest of your life that way? Or and it's not, I'm not trying to put you on the spot for formal announcements of, because you facilitate my peer group, but I'm just also curious about what are you most excited about at this point in your career, and what you think comes next after that?
I'm really happy doing what I'm doing. I am, as you know, I'm kind of tracking back a little. I really went all off last year and had a lot of groups that I was working with and a lot of travel as a result of that. I've had personal tragedies in my life that have caused me to reevaluate a lot of stuff. And I know that tomorrow is promised to no one. And so my wife and I are really kind of focusing on, you know, making sure that we live and that I don't just work and work and work and then retire and die. So we're trying to, you know, we're very lucky. One of the great things, my son is a junior in college and he's going to be studying forestry. And he is doing a semester abroad in New Zealand starting in January. And so, you know, it's very typical. So now my wife and I have to take our son to college again. So we're going to go to New Zealand for 3 weeks and travel around and with him for a little bit and then drop him off and go do some more traveling on our own. So that's important to me and my wife. That's something we love doing together. And, you know, there's fly fishing involved in that. So we'll have some fun, but I have to keep working. I mean, I could not imagine not working because it would be just like we said, that growing stagnant and irrelevant. And working with groups keeps me energized and excited, and I like doing that. So as far as I know, I'm still doing this, just maybe a little less here and there.
Well, I mean, I think that's a nod to the world of consultancy. You have a greater control over what you want to do and how you want to live that life. And so it is, you know, a fantastic transition for that work some, play some kind of scenarios or do something different piece. And so, and you've only shown me the fun you could have when you're not working. And the hard work in your career that allows you to do things, I think, is those are fun stories that we why, you know, you're in the, what are we doing this for? You know, it's to have these experiences or find the import, what's important to us and family or in life, and just really embrace those pieces. So you're never bored.
No, you can't be. And I think it's, you know, important to realize that life is short and you want to enjoy it. And that's not just a hedonistic, you know, just do it because it feels good, but what's good for your mind, what's good for your soul, what's good for your faith, your family. I think those are all important things to look into and make sure you're feeding yourself on all those levels.
Love that. That's why, love that.
That's why working is critical, you know, being mentally challenged, helping others, giving back. But taking time is also a real good thing.
Love that.
Well, we, and that time of reflection, we often say we end things with the rose and thorns. So Scott, I want you to kick it off here. What's been going well? What's been going maybe a little thorny lately in life for you?
Yeah, great. Exciting thing that's happening that we're planning right now is my middle daughter. She's 13. And my wife and I, made a plan a few years back that when each of our kids were in their 13th or 14th year, that they would get to plan a trip with mom and dad, like a week-long trip with mom and dad. So they get a budget and it has to be fun and it has to be educational. So my middle daughter's decided she wants to go on a cruise. None of us have been on a cruise, and she wants to go on a cruise. We'll be sailing out of Galveston and down into Mexico to see some of the Mayan ruins and travel to a different country. So she's taking Spanish in school. And so right. The rose is that we just booked the cruise and she's deciding all these things she wants to do, and it'll be really fun. And so the thorn is I got to pay for a cruise with my daughter, my wife this spring. And so, So gotta sort that out, but it's all good. So yeah, that's the rose and the thorn. We're excited.
Do you get overtime at Landcare? Do they offer overtime, or is that you could try.
But not at the. I gotta go get back on a mower in order to earn overtime.
Right, there it is. There, you know the path. Joe, how about you? A rose and a thorn.
Well, I think my rose I gave, which is I'm really excited, looking forward to New Zealand for a couple weeks, with my wife and my son. The thorn, not unlike you, Skylar, is as I pull back on my consulting, and you know, go from 5 peer groups down to 2 peer groups, the amount of free miles and hotel points and things like that deteriorates rapidly, which has really afforded my wife and I some great opportunities to have some very inexpensive vacations.
Yeah.
But now having to actually pay cash for those things, it we'll see how that impacts us on our travel life.
Yeah. As well.
There's right. For all the time away as a consultant, there are some potential values in there if you know how to lean on them. Right. And so you can fly just about anywhere if you put enough time and effort into going to enough small places to work. So, there are perks. Absolutely. I'll share as a rose. We are embracing winter season, even though it's not here. The mind is shifting to the ski, the fun, the outdoors, and that wintertime space. My father is working hard to find a place up in the mountains, or maybe I think by the time this airs, we'll be have closed, and so we've got some time to really get outdoors and see some spaces. So new chapters and for 2024 here that I'm excited about. The thorn will continue to be just to say, how do we make 2024 the year that we are planning? And so we're going to shake off some things that really just sort of tied us down in 2023. And we've got, I think, the team, we've got the momentum, we just got to execute. And so, and as much time as you think you have a full year, it is not that much time. It is amazing how fast this is moving. And so how do we just really get into it this year and really make sure that the things that we want to fix are being fixed? So it's on my mind. It's not necessarily a thorn, but it does keep it stay right up there in the front of the lobe there. So, well, Joe, thank you. Always great seeing you. Skylar, always wonderful. Killing it.
Yeah. Right? Sorry I cut you off, but yeah, great conversation today, Joe. Thanks for being with us and sharing some of your insight and experience with us today.
Yeah, the both of for the both of you. Just again, I've always appreciated the outside experiences. You know, specifically, my career has always been the straight path within this industry. But to be able to meet folks like you and many, many M1s out there that are just touching and really supporting this industry is always cool to hear and exciting to see the full breadth of what anybody can do here. So have a great week. Thank you to our listeners. If you love what you heard, please subscribe and share away.